You're listening to Brick to the Future, the property investment show for everyday Australians. We cut through the white noise so you can minimise risk and make smart, informed investment decisions. If you're after tips and strategies while building a property portfolio that suits your lifestyle, you're in the right place.
Matt, thanks for joining me. Great to see you again.
Yeah, likewise, Cam.
All right, last session we did was the four reasons why people prefer to buy established over new, and those reasons were really we talked about coming back to visual things, and we talked about smart investors invest 90% with their brain and only 10% with their eyes. So their eyes tend to trick you and makes emotional decisions where your brain tends to focus on numbers. And we talked about the four reasons people prefer established property initially are really that visual aspect. They can see it. It's got something to hang their hat on. They then attach emotion to that when they can visually picture themselves living in the property. And then there's the things they can't see, which freak them out and make them hang their hat on something established, which is the builder going broke and delays. And you went into a lot of detail about contractually how you can overcome those things. The things we want to get into today are really the five reasons why it makes financial sense to build new and how those numbers really work for you. So let's get into it. If we think about a new property, if you've got two houses in a street, one's fresh and the other one's a bit tired, well, the newer house will rent faster and potentially rent for more. So an extra $20 in your back pocket per week can mean over $1,000 per year. So obviously tenant appeal is a big one. Less repairs and maintenance. I know that I've had established homes that I've purchased in the past and even a primary place of residence that I got building checks done on. And the best one was really the nicely maroon painted wall in the master bedroom. And I found out when every season changed that the foundations shifted and a huge crack would appear. And the reason it was painted was because each year the previous owner would just paint over it and had done that to sell the property. So even getting a building check on established home, you can have tens of thousands of dollars in repairs that are required just to get the home so it's livable. So that's probably in a new home, while you're going to have maintenance that you need to do. It's like I always say, a home's like a new car. You know, people spend $1,000 a year on servicing their new car, but they think that you don't have to do any maintenance on a new property.
Just one thing I found out. So obviously I moved, relocated up to Brisbane at the start of this year after renovating my house over the last couple of years down in Melbourne. And I would say we did not cut corners, almost spared no expense, went premium on every material we could. And obviously on the quality of trades. But I found out at the end of the year, because we were doing lots and lots of small renovations over time, that there's a requirement to get a building license for any work that collectively exceeds $15,000. So I had to do a fair bit of work that in relation to this, because the buyer of my house called by the agent, because there was a bit of an issue with some plumbing work that had been done, which subsequently I spent a couple of grand kind of repairing that. On their behalf. Now, when I was doing the research, what I discovered was that I had assumed and known that over $15,000 you need a building permit, but because the work was largely done in small amounts over five years, no single bit was really over the mark, other than some earlier works which we did have a permit for. So in doing that, I actually discovered that when you have over $15,000 of work as an owner builder, you take on all of the liability that a normal builder would take. So if you're doing lots and lots of what might be repairs or slight minor improvements, if they collectively exceed $15,000, you can ultimately be on the hook for the next 7 years. When you sell that house, you're liable for anything that happens as a result of those works. That means any repairs or structural issues that might have been caused by it, obviously that's huge liability as well. And that's something that a lot of people don't often realize when they're taking on an established house. It's, look at just a little bit of a doer-upper. That doer-upper might send you bankrupt if the works aren't absolutely spot on. Or obviously go and get your building permit, costs a bit more. You're probably going to have to jump through a lot more hoops than maybe you initially thought that you would have, but absolutely critical to understand those things.
Yeah, I think it can be that never-ending the money pit or the black hole where you just seem to pour money, more and more money into it, which is what I found. Some renovations, I found out that by the time I'd done the renovation, the cost of it and any extra money I'd made was eaten up by the cost of the renovation and then the tax I paid on the growth of the property. I was better just to buy something new and hang on to it over the long term and had a much more better outcome. I think one of the other main advantages of buying new is obviously less stamp duty. So your buying costs are a huge factor when trying to get that deposit and costs together. And when you buy something new, you only pay stamp duty on the land. So basically you're paying half thereabouts of the stamp duty in round numbers. The biggest two I'd say would be depreciation. And the one that I want to get into a little bit with you is the optimum size and quality property. You know, if you think about depreciation, it means you can offset the depreciated amount against your income and pay a lower tax amount potentially, depending on where you are financially. Everyone's got different tax and accounting circumstances, but I know we provide our clients with a property investment analysis, which shows the exact amounts they can, and that combined with a depreciation schedule, they can hand that to an accountant and end up in a much better financial situation and therefore lowering the holding cost of the property. So we get down to what it takes to build wealth is really holding the most asset with the least amount of money out of your back pocket. And depreciation over the first few years of a new property is a fantastic benefit.
Yes, hold on. What, just out of interest, what's the cost of holding a property that you don't have to pay for a year?
That you don't have to pay for a year? If you have to hold a property that you don't have to pay for? I'd say it's zero if you don't have to hold it.
Okay, because that's one of the other great things that you can get right now. And it's not all, this isn't something that's going to apply forever, but right now, buying land, you can secure for the cost of a deposit. And you don't have to settle on it until the developer has produced it. Often that could be 6 months or 12 months from the day you sign a contract. And we've been seeing some of our clients, obviously, even through our fund and ourselves personally as well, generating heaps of equity through buying the land, waiting, obviously, until the developers produce drop titles, and then settling. By the time we're settling, I think one of our clients picked up 56 grand. I know that...
It's an $80,000 the other day.
$80,000, wow. And Resi Fund had one of the properties we bought in Brisbane only a few months ago, within 6 months, had gone up a couple of $100,000 before we'd even settled on the land. So that's another advantage. You're not turning up and buying a house with a 6 or 12 month settlement right now. The owners expect to be settling in sort of 30, 60 days. And you're missing out.
You start paying for those costs.
Free ride. Yeah.
Yeah. People don't comprehend the amount. So the return on the money you're putting in is really the equation that you're talking about there. I remember my wife Felicity's cousin John bought a couple of properties through us, and his first property he purchased through us didn't settle for over 12 months when he purchased. This is going back nearly a decade now, when he purchased the land and it wasn't settling for about just under 12 months. It ended up being over. And I remember him calling us a couple of times going, "This is ridiculous. Why can't we get started?" Now, he'd paid a 10% deposit on the land. So he might've paid 20 grand or whatever it may be at the time. And once I did the math for him, I had to do it a couple of times to go, "You've made $70,000 and you've put in $20,000. You haven't started yet." So once he got that, and it wasn't until the house was built and finished that he actually said, "I get what you mean now. I had a free ride for just over 12 months before I had to start paying anything." So we've got that. If we summarize the four so far that we've talked about, the tenant appeal. So obviously you're getting more rent with a new property. It'll rent faster, less repairs and maintenance. You got less stamp duty, more depreciation, the optimum size and quality property, something I want to talk a little bit about. And I know this is something you and the build team spend a huge amount of time, is getting that perfect property size specifically and quality. But size is a big factor when it comes down to it in any area, and every area is different, isn't it?
Yeah, spot on. We need to be really careful here, because some people might think that bigger is just better. So you make all the rooms bigger, and that's not the case. Every square meter is, and every inch is valuable. it's how you use that extra space. So prime example, and look, this sort of thing changes in a suburb over time as well as suburbs mature. And that's one of the important things to understand, I guess, the life cycle of a suburb, really newer suburbs or suburbs that maybe adjoin premium areas or might be price sensitive at one point in time. So Greenvale and Roxburgh Park is probably a prime example. In 2011, Roxburgh Park was very price sensitive. It was right next to Greenvale, which was a more premium suburb. And unfortunately, it wasn't getting dragged up, wasn't attracting the same premium as Greenvale. And doing a four-bedroom house with double car garage, two bathrooms, and a single living area was about kind of where the market was at. That was optimum size and quality at the time. It was going to cost about an extra $20,000 to put another living room into one of those houses. Could have been up to 25, and the valuation wouldn't have been there at the time. Now, fast forward 10 years, something with double living area generates about $60,000 to $70,000 more value in selling a house. So think about it, costs 25 grand extra to put in, but creates $70,000 extra value down the track. Now, that doesn't mean that if you went back to 2011, you would make a different decision about what you put in. Obviously, that reaches a tipping point where all of a sudden people are prepared to pay more for slightly larger or a bit more amenity. But it's really important to understand that and understand the demographics of the area, how it's going to change, ensuring that you're putting the right house on the land to capture the value, not just today, but also into the future.
Yeah.
And that's, again, going to be different by suburbs. Some suburbs won't hit that tipping point because they'll always be price sensitive. But other suburbs that, as I said, are adjoining a premium suburb, where you know that premium suburb is just going to keep going up, and then it creates what we call a price differential between the premium suburb and the neighbor, which is obviously a lot more affordable, perhaps doesn't have the prestige of the premium suburb initially. Yeah. All of a sudden, people just realize, wow, I can get so much more value just going 100 meters that way, crossing the suburb border.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, prices get dragged up. And we're seeing that through that area in Craigieburn as well. But without focusing too much on the area, that happens all around Australia at different times as suburbs evolve. And getting that optimum size and quality, not just for the value, but also to make sure you maximize the rent. And even can even come down to what finishes you put in changes as that, depending on where the suburb's at and its evolution and where you expect it to be in 12 or 18 months' time.
Yeah, and I often see the build team in the office there measuring out room sizes and trying to get the perfect size, because if you can reduce, and if we'll go, I'll give a really raw example. It's a lot more complex than this. Or two raw examples, just so people can try and grasp the concept of overcapitalizing is probably the term that gets thrown around a fair bit, but no one knows how not to overcapitalize. And they usually think overcapitalizing means putting gold chandeliers in a place that doesn't have any in the area. But overcapitalizing for me comes down to building something too big for the area, and it doesn't get you any more in bank panel valuation or rental yield. I think if I summarize the two reasons why or two examples you can use, if you've got to think about it really simply, and the way we talked about early days, Matt, the way we try to explain it to clients, every $1,000 you spend, will you get an extra $1,000 in bank panel valuation? Because it's not about what you can get it in sales price. Will the valuer put another $1,000 on it? Now, really, they look at square meter rate. So ensuring you're reducing things like, and they also look at bedrooms. They value based on the amount of bedrooms in a property. So, and the other thing is, every $1,000 do you spend, do you get about $10 more in rental yield? So if you want to put, for example, stone bench tops throughout your laundry, and it's going to cost another $1,000, do you get 10 bucks more in your rental yield? So thinking a little bit smarter about there, ensuring you're not overcapitalizing. So if I summarize these, Louis, what we talked about in the last episode was the four reasons people prefer to buy established, and they're all visual reasons, potentially what you can see, the visual appeal, and then the emotion you attach to that. And then the visual things you can't see, the builder going broke and delays. As long as you've got the right guarantees in place, or you use a builder that is referred by someone who knows that builder's stable and will finish things on time, you're safe there. But then we summarized in this episode the five reasons why building makes financial sense and why you should be using your brain to make investment decisions and not your eyes. And so we've got tenant appeal, you'll get more rent and it'll rent out faster, less repairs and maintenance, less stamp duty you're going to pay, more depreciation, which reduces your holding costs and means you can hold more property. And then the optimum size and quality property. So making sure you're not overcapitalizing and you get maximizing your the rent you're getting out of a property and the bank panel valuation you're getting today and into the future. So I think it gives a good summary. Once again, it is daunting building new if you haven't done it before, but financially it makes a hell of a lot of sense. And I haven't looked back since I started building new.
Oh, absolutely. And even just that peace of mind, knowing, not that everything's always perfect when you build new from like the day that you get a tenant in. In fact, the first 6 months, you can kind of have a few little things that are like touch-ups on paint and kind of minor things to just tweak. But once the house is kind of settled and you're through that initial phase, then it's almost set and forget. Very little to do for quite a while. And I've had houses for 20 years that, other than at 10 years, maybe doing a couple of touch-ups, you kind of forget about again, as opposed to, say, I've renovated a house that was 90 years old and that was an absolute kind of money pit that just constantly working on. And even after you finish doing something, as I said, you look up in the corner and you're seeing cracks again that you were there kind of 6 months earlier. So I think there's something to be said for that peace of mind once you can overcome that fear of building.
Yeah, no, that's it. We'll get some advice. Open Corp's happy to help you step through some of those contractual requirements to ensure you're safe and do some of those financial analysis if people need it. So, Matt, thanks for your time. Always good to talk property.
Yeah, likewise, Cam.
Thank you for listening to Brick to the Future, powered by Open Corp, Australia's leading property investment specialists. For more information on how we can help you build your financial future, contact us at opencorp.com.au.